raised to the probably modest level at best, but it also speaks to a measure that could be targeted towards systemsness and how systems put multiple clinical service lines together and how they coordinate care. So I think from that standpoint, from a large system standpoint, it would really be a high impact. So I would rate that fairly high.
Which would be, do you think it's complete?
I think it's somewhere between C and P. Again, the volume is not that great, but it's a population that has not been targeted, and it's a resource-intensive population.
Okay. You're a P plus or a C minus, I guess.
Exactly. I think he's either way.
Yeah. Can I comment? It's Brian.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think one of the really important issues when I think about these measures is I think about the ultimate outcome, and probably the ultimate outcome is long term high quality survival, and so here you're looking at getting the in-hospital mortality rate down, which is good, but it's a step in an entire process of taking a patient, maybe preventing a bleed to begin with, all the way down to them having a nice long lifespan. And I think one of the concerns I have with this is written, it's supposed to be esophageal hemorrhage, and it seems to want to focus on variceal bleeding. I guess the question is, you could have an impact on improving, you know, in-hospital mortality, but what's the ultimate goal with these patients? And once there's been a bleed, are we measuring the wrong thing? I mean, would we be better served trying to create measures to ensure long-term survivability? Because we all know that the mortality associated, you know, within 6 months to a year of a cirrhotic with their first variceal hemorrhage is quite high. Whether they live through the first admission in the hospital, that's important, but I don't know that the impact is focused on the right area. And I just put that out there because I think it's important to discuss.
I would agree with that from a patient-centered focus. If we're focused on patients with such severe liver disease that they have an esophageal hemorrhage, that's one thing. If you look at the impact as a system-wide approach for a hospital having to coordinate care, I think you can expand that to have a little bit higher impact. Because obviously, if you coordinate the number of different resources from ICU to emergency department to GI, everything, to approach this, then that would have benefit over and above just this patient. So it depends on the focus.
This is Dave. To Brian's point, the focus here is about esophageal varices, and then we get kind of muddy pretty quickly. So
right.
Yeah.
The impact is the problem.
The impact is directed at the intent of the measure is directed at the intent of the measure. So I'm struggling with impact because I think it's directed at a different target population than it's defined by the rest of the measure.
Correct. That's
correct. So Reva, could you speak to that a little bit? Are we focused on the impact to the patient, or are there broader impacts?
You can use certainly the impact to the patient is an important one. Other impacts, such as you mentioned, the systemness, the care coordination elements, the resource utilization elements are also important aspects that you can certainly consider. So, you know, if you feel it has high impact on those characteristics, it's fine to rate it high.
That was my thinking, actually.
So, John, we'd go with with a partial on this. I think that there's a lot of concerns as we get further into this discussion.
Right, I think that'll bring it down.
Yeah.
The 1B, the opportunity for improvement, I think that just intuitively there's a tremendous variation in the success rate for this particular measure. So I think from an opportunity improvement, it can be relatively high. Whether you say the opportunity for improvement may be mitigated by the fact that these patients have really a tremendous morbidity anyway, that would modify it. So I guess I would, again, for the same reason we just discussed, aim for more of a P.
Discussion around that? Okay, John, relation?
The evidence is pretty good, but unfortunately, it's most of the evidence presented here is really targeted to GI hemorrhage, which is a lot broader issue. And I think this is where we can bring up the discussion of how broad this measure is. The summary of evidence around GI hemorrhage is fairly extensive. The summary of evidence for esophageal varices by itself is a little bit less so, but there's obviously fairly robust evidence as well. So, I would probably rate this a P.
Discussion around that? Okay, with three P's and maybe a P+, but we'll go next to the scientific acceptability, John.
The scientific acceptability, I think, is good. I think there's really good guidelines around this from the American College of Gastroenterology, from the AASLD. I think the scientific evidence for this is high. A lot of these interventions, specific interventions that are recommended, again, for mostly variceal, are grade 1A evidence, 1B evidence, things like that. So I think from that standpoint, it's very good. Again, if you focus on esophageal, but it gets muddied with the broader category of gastrointestinal hemorrhage.
Okay, so let's walk through each of the categories, the subcategories here. Specificity.
Sorry, I've lost my page here.
So the overview, it's very good, strong evidence, but the specifics are where we're going to, I think, run into trouble here.
There we go. Yes, the specifics. The specifics broaden this to gastrointestinal hemorrhage, and the codes here are really too broad, frankly. I mean, that's the bottom line, because it includes most of the pretty much everything that causes bleeding.
This is Cheryl Davies from the development team at HRQ, and I was wondering if I could clarify.
Yes, please.
The definition here. Because although it appears that the definition is broad, it actually has to do with coding rules, and that is why you'll see the GI hemorrhage there. So the way that the coding rules work for esophageal varices are if the esophageal varices are not related to an underlying condition, then that code can be coded as either the principal or secondary diagnosis. However, if the esophageal varices is related to a underlying condition such as liver disease, then the code must be coded as the varices must be coded as a secondary condition, with the primary condition being the underlying disease. What we found in data analysis in looking at this is that oftentimes a generic GI hemorrhage code was used in the principal position with a secondary diagnosis code of esophageal varices. So, and in addition, of course, following the coding guidance, the principal diagnosis of underlying condition with a secondary diagnosis of esophageal varices. So what you see here is simply trying to make sure that we capture all the cases, and given variation in coding practices. So you have three groups. You have a group that has esophageal varices that are coded in the secondary position, and another code for some GI hemorrhage, and usually that's an unspecified code, in the principal position. And the second group that you have are those that have a principal diagnosis for an underlying condition and a secondary diagnosis of esophageal varices. And the third group that you'll have there are patients with a principal diagnosis of esophageal varices with bleeding. So all of the three cases require a diagnosis code for esophageal varices. It's just attempting to make sure that we capture all the cases and using the principal diagnosis codes to ensure that we capture the primary reason for their hospitalization.
This is Dave Johnson. Did you validate that to look at charts to prove that that was that your analysis process is appropriate?
No, we have not done chart review on the data. This is based on using the statewide the large ARC data sets, so the SIDS and the ACEs.
So my point is just defining the accuracy of your extraction.
Yeah.
So essentially, we're in the same position as we were in the previous two measures. I certainly understand the need for broad inclusion, but the question is whether that really boils down to the specific measure, and can that be? And I guess that has not been validated yet.
This is Dick Johannes. Can I ask you, the people from ARC, the question, did you examine the three code set definitions in isolation to look at differences in rates? Clearly, if varices are in our principal diagnosis, no, I don't think anyone's going to argue. The problem with the coding rule definitions is you would like to see what your rate differences are between that and the principals, because it is certainly possible for someone to have 530/535/01 in acute gastritis with hemorrhage in a patient who has esophageal varices coded as a secondary diagnosis, but they're not necessarily bleeding.
Yes, so these we did look at that, and I'll need to be able to pull up those analyses if people want numbers. In this case, the secondary diagnosis code for esophageal varices requires mention of bleeding.
Oh, secondary with mention of bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got it.
So, John, for specificity, what we've looked at is and you've defined as some of the extraction of this data and the three sets that the developer just proposed may not be applicable to a validated measure for proving that these are patients that they're being captured in this measure.
Correct.
And your recommendation then?
I would recommend this at best a partially.
Comments are impartial.
This is Brian. I would think this is minimal. I'm looking at the measure. I'm trying to look through this, and if someone is coded as having varices and they come in with a code for diverticular bleeding, large intestine, would they fall into the denominator for this measure set?
I think she said only if it was only if the code was that they were bleeding
from varices, right?
In other words, they had a code for variceal bleeding as well, not just varices.
I'm sorry, I just don't see that in the paperwork I'm looking at. Is it just because it's off screen?
No, it's not in the paperwork. That's why I had Shachinath. I think that's where we all were getting confused.
Right.
Well, it has to be in the paper to be. This is the measure. This is it. We can grade on what we're looking at. We have to give to the steering committee the evidence of what's been presented to us.
What's missing is the logic and methodology around grouping these codes and narrowing them down. I think that's what we're struggling with.
Well, and as well, the validation of the extraction.
Exactly.
The
methodology is not presented.
Yeah. So I think
it's probably downgrade to a minimal.
Okay. Brian, you win again. We're keeping score.
Oh, no. I mean, I don't mean to be a jerk. I just
I'm
trying to understand the process and.
I think we agree that really, based on the presented information, with a lack of validation, it probably can't rise to the partial. I would agree with that.
Okay. Any other comments on?
Be worth mentioning to the developers that if in terms of going forward, and thinking about refining this. This is one of the places where present on admission coding could be very valuable. Because that would tell you, that would really help you in the case you just cited, Brian. You'd love to have the variceal secondary also have POA plus. POA is true.
Okay, John, how about reliability and validity? I think they're probably going to be in the same
category. Same category, exactly.
Yeah. Let's take those together. Any comments or questions around that?
I would recommend the same.
Partial?
No, minimal.
No, minimal. Right, minimal. There really hasn't been any validation presented yet.
You might argue the validation is none, because the reason I said the extraction is the key here. We're given a three scenarios that are verbalized, but we're not even given a validation of the extraction to granularity of the measure target. So I'd almost go to none.
Not at all. Yeah.
I'm sure the method's probably valid, but you have it or you don't. I don't mean to override your comment, but I'm just trying to play by the rules.
No, I think that's valid. I think that's very valid.
So we're saying that for both B and C?
B and C, correct.
All righty.
Exclusions. They really don't list exclusions.
They do. Liver transplant.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong page. The pregnancy, liver transplants. Exactly.
Your recommendation here, John?
This is... This is difficult because this is such a diverse population, such a diverse and complex population. The exclusions here are relatively few. I think at face value, these would be reasonable. I guess I would give it a partial.
This is going to come down to the same thing, and we talked
issues,
about
right?
risk adjustment. So comments about exclusions? Let's take them together, just because I think they're pretty much hand in hand here, that they're both going to be partial.
I think that's true.
Comments around that?
What specific comments about the risk adjustment do you have?
The risk adjustments here are, on face value, relatively few for a complex population. I guess that would be my gut feeling.
All
right.
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Dr. Patrick Romano from the development team.
Yes.
I was just curious if you could provide a bit more guidance about what other sort of exclusions the committee feels might be appropriate. These were the exclusions that were proposed through our own review and our own panel process. So we're just interested in other suggestions.
I think this is Brian. It might be helpful to know that just why you thought those exclusions. I look at them, and what's in my mind is you're trying to avoid bias. So by taking out transplant and cancer, you're not, let's say, finding that someone who is a cancer center or a transplant center, which is going to potentially have a much higher mortality rate, they're not getting hurt for those patients who may not be comparable across the board for all settings. And if that's your justification, I think those exclusions are fine. If it's simply because, well, those are really sick people, so we don't want to look at that, then those exclusions are not appropriate. And so maybe if you said what was your rationale for having exclusions, we could better guide you.
Well, I think as you said, it's an effort to reduce bias and to improve comparability across hospitals, especially for very rare conditions for which it's difficult to adequately risk adjust.
When it comes down to variceal bleeding, that becomes such a predominant issue that I'm not really sure that excluding some of these would be appropriate.
So I think we can build out a list. I mean, how gastric varices play into this and are lumped together sometimes is another issue. I think that maybe we can work on a little bit of helping the sponsor at least on some exclusions. But I do think the lack of exclusions does introduce a tremendous bias. So we'd give this a minimal or a partial?
I would give it a minimal.
Okay. For exclusions?
Right.
Okay. Any other thoughts around that? Okay, and risk adjustment.
Risk adjustment
is
probably
same.
The same issues.
Now, risk adjustment, this is Brian, risk adjustment to me in this field is probably the most important risk adjustment for outcome in this population is alcoholism or non-alcoholism, because it has to do with the substrate, the patient coming in, and what their condition, their overall condition is like and the likelihood of recovering anyway. So if you have a center that is dealing with a lot of autoimmune disorders that have compromised the liver or other reasons, that's very different than the patient population who are alcoholic. And if you can't, and that's, I don't know an accurate way to capture information like alcoholism from that hospital admission from the coding. I'd be afraid you'd miss a lot of it if you were just looking for a diagnosis of alcoholism or referral to an alcohol treatment center or things like that.
And it also plays into active alcohol use versus latent alcohol use.
Right, that's right. Exactly. That's right.
Which would be very difficult to capture.
Well, it's going to really introduce a tremendous stratification bias in referral centers too, because patients that that may be going transplant evaluation, there's a what their underlying comorbidities are. So the risk adjustment here, I think, is really going to be a key issue.
Key issue, and also urban centers versus suburban centers.
Sure. So the consensus is towards minimal. Okay. Comments around that? Okay, meaningful differences, John?
2F, meaningful differences. I think there's definitely meaningful differences among centers, but again, I think it suffers from the issues that we identified before. I would probably rate this a little bit higher as a P.
Comments around partial? Okay, John, comparability?
I think comparability of multiple data sources is being problematic because, again, much of the issues here are centered around clinical information as opposed to pure claims data. So I think I would rate this relatively low. I think it would be very difficult to really understand the comparability.
So you put this as minimal?
At best.
Okay. All right, and consensus around that? Comments? Okay, disparities?
Disparities in care. I think this is obviously a very important part. I think there are disparities in care around access, disparities in care around services provided. I would actually rate this portion fairly high.
Do you think it's complete?
Probably, I would still rate it as a P.
Okay.
Well, so I guess my question is, how do you stratify
right.
with the claims, with the data that's getting reported? You can stratify age, you can stratify gender. I guess you can stratify by payer. Can you stratify by race or ethnicity?
Usually not, unless the developer could speak to that. I think that's one of the biggest disparities in the care of these patients.
Yes, that's correct. Race ethnicity is available for stratification, and such stratification is performed using the nationwide inpatient sample and other similar data sets.
So it's part of the specifications for this measure to do that?
It's not a required part of the specification of the measure, but it's available to users who wish to do that.
I guess I would recommend that it would be part of the specifications.
This is Rocco Ricciardi. If the NIS is the data set to be used, it hides race about 25% of the time.
I would still write this as a P.
I'm a little concerned about losing a population and calling it partial. It doesn't emphasize the need that we not selectively capture stuff, but
that we
totally capture.
Well, in general, we never include race or ethnicity as a required specification in the indicator because of concern that it focuses that it may essentially allow people to ignore differences in care. In other words, including race or ethnicity into as a risk adjustment variable may obscure differences across racial or ethnic groups. So we generally recommend that users directly examine those differences rather than including them within the specification of the measure. Is that different?
And I would fully agree with that. If you risk adjust for it, you can no longer see the effect. You just want to make sure that it's applied to a population where you can separate the patients into various groups of potentially disparities of care. Which I would agree, you wouldn't want to risk adjust for it, or it's the equivalent of you no longer can see differences in something that you risk adjust for.
So let's
then I would go for a P.
Go for a P, and I think you've got consensus around that, John.
Right.
Usability.
They cite a number of different places where it has been used, and you can read the list here. I guess my question from the to the developers are, can you describe a little bit about how this was used among these various within these various agencies and places?
This is John Bada with ARC.
Yes.
In general, the when reported when appearing in public reports for comparison purposes, it's typically reported by statistical significance at the 95% confidence interval. And some sites allow one to drill down and perhaps see the risk adjusted rate, but the predominant way it's reported is by statistical significance.
And what I couldn't glean out of this is, what's the experience from these centers, the cumulative experience in using this particular measure? Has this measure been tested in these various programs and initiatives?
Yeah, I'm not tracking really what the question
He's
is.
He's asking.
So what's the experience of usability for the measure? You've listed a number of different places, and what's the actual implementation and results from that? That was my question.
I'm still not sure what the question is. These states have been using the measures from either being in their first year or a number of years.
Okay.
Has any state tested the accuracy of the measure in real use?
I'm not sure of that. I don't know if anybody else on the ARC QI team is aware of that.
I think what we're trying to get at is how far into using this measure have these various agencies been? And your answer actually is excellent. I mean, they're in sort of a preliminary first year stage, but I think that was Brian that said, what's closing the loop? What's the result of that?
Yeah, well, I had noted a number of states have been using this measure for one or a number of years. So sorry if I didn't say that very well.
John, who who's used it the longest, and have they seen trend effects?
I don't know the answer to that. ARC doesn't formally track who is using which measures. We've come to learn of this, who's using measures more informally, primarily by our Quality Indicators Learning Institute, which we held last fiscal year, and other user groups ARC has convened in the past.
John, I think this is Dave again. I think it comes back to what are we intending to measure here when we talk about the usability. Are we measuring it for GI variceal hemorrhage, or is it something that's getting commingled?
Broader. That was exactly what I was going to say, too.
Well, it's been measured based on the past ARC QI specifications for this measure, typically version 3.2 and prior to that. So I don't know if Patrick or Cheryl can speak to what are the differences in this that you see.
I think the question is, is it GI hemorrhage in general, or is it specifically to the esophageal varices?
Yeah. That'd be a question for Cheryl or Patrick. What was being measured in version 3.2, which has been used to calculate for these reports that you see?
This is Cheryl Davies, version 3.2 is broader for GI hemorrhage. In looking at the differences between them, we see, I believe, and I need to look up the exact number, about half of the cases of mortality were associated with esophageal varices with bleeding diagnosis codes. And but the definition is actually for that larger GI hemorrhage list that you see on the NQF form. And I apologize, we looked back at the NQF forms and saw that our denominator statement was inadvertently left out of there. And that's why there's so much confusion. So mm-hmm. we can send that information along as well.
So I guess based on, in the interest of time, I guess based on this application, I would have to rate that as a not with a recommendation that it comes back with a little bit more granular data.
Okay, let's take that as a proposal and the consensus here. Any other comments from the TAP? Okay, John, how about harmonization and partial? I'm sorry, harmonization. Sorry, I didn't mean to prejudge this here. Go ahead.
Right. I think that would be. I agree. I think that would be partial. I think that this would be difficult to spread across. But again, I think in terms of what was presented here, there's a lot of experience that I think crosses over to the GI hemorrhage. But again, there's still a lot of experience in implementing measures that are closely related to this. So I guess I had rated this as a partial.
Okay, discussion around that. Added value, John?
There's nothing like this that we have within the NQF series. So I think this has a high added value, potentially, if it's cleaned up.
So you'd make this a P plus or a
P plus probably
P plus okay
right exactly
so partial with the text to clarify that we need it
that once it's cleaned up and really and granular I think it would really be excellent.
Agree. Comments around that?
This is Brian. I guess I'm curious about this version 3B or 3.2 or 2.0 or whatever it was. Because it sounds like there's a broader GI hemorrhage and mortality measure that's in use, that's been developed, that appears usable, and is that measure already NQF endorsed?
This is John Bott. No, but maybe Cheryl or Patrick could provide more context.
I could address that. This is Patrick Romano. We have actually had over the years that this GI hemorrhage indicator has been in use. Quite a bit of feedback from the user community as well as other stakeholders indicating that the primary interest is in this subset of patients with esophageal hemorrhage because of the availability of relatively new interventions, both pharmacologic interventions as well as procedural interventions to stop bleeding and to stabilize these patients. So the recommendation was made and actually carried through an expert panel discussion that we had to focus this indicator a bit more narrowly on these patients who have esophageal varices.
So the answer to the question, there is no NQF-endorsed GI hemorrhage mortality measure.
There is currently no NQF-endorsed GI hemorrhage mortality indicator.
This is Riva. Is ARC maintaining that as a separate measure, or has it essentially evolved into this one?
At this point, it is still maintained as a separate measure, although the measures are always subject to periodic review based on user feedback and new information regarding validity. And so it is possible that the broader measure may be withdrawn. But there's no plan right now to do that.
Okay. John, I think the added value you said was
high.
Certainly potentially high,
right.
But not complete.
But not complete based on the discussion above.
Okay. So Reva will make that a P.
And the feasibility, again, I think we've asked about some of the logic stream and methodology, and I think that would apply here to the feasibility as well.
Okay, let's just walk through this quickly, the data by product of care. Or would you make these partial across the board?
I would make these partial across the board, personally. But to open it up for discussion, I would make these partial.
I think we've had a pretty robust discussion, and these points, so I think we'll all come back in the same context as we look at this. Is that a reasonable thing? Is it feasible to lump these together as partial if the group would just weigh in on that?
You're talking about feasibility?
Yeah.
I think it's a stratification issue. Again, if you're going to include active alcohol use, I don't know how you're going to capture that. And then it comes down to how is that a very important piece or not.
Brian, question for you on that. If for recidivism, that would be a critical issue. But for acute in-hospital mortality, why would alcohol differ from other forms of end-stage liver disease? Now, you could argue that you'd like to have some physiologic measures like proton albumin to stratify, but why do you think it would affect the particular instance of hospitalization? Whereas I think of that as more of a recidivistic problem.
No, I think it has direct impact on mortality, in-hospital mortality. You've got toxin.
It's all comorbidities. You've got all kinds of end-stage diseases that are totally different and nutritional status. I think the transplant centers love to get a non-alcoholic transplant,
yeah.
End-stage liver disease. And alcoholics, just because the rest of the physiology is off, there's also detox complications or seizure complications, but their nutrition and end-stage disease, other organs are really what drive the paradigm.
Active alcoholic hepatitis on top of a chronic liver disease, and you have a much, much different state.
Yep.
Okay, so let's complete. I think we have partial across all those. There's no question this is a huge area that has a tremendous impact, but we just need a little better granularity around the extraction and then focus this measure, I think, is the consensus.
Can I ask also about, sorry, it's Brian, about distinctive and additive value, just to go back one. I guess it gets back to the issue I raised initially, which was, the outcome of patients with a variceal hemorrhage 6 months out is not very good. So you may have an impact here, and people have argued, well, it's really a process measure, it's a multidisciplinary approach and things like that. So for the distinctive additive value, I would ask, is there a sort of intensive care unit measure that already is in place that NQF has endorsed that looks at those important key aspects where you take the real sick folks, how do they do, and does it need to be the variceal folks if they're going to end up in an ICU anyway, and you're just looking at in-hospital mortality?
Actually, Brian, currently within this project, one of the other TAPs is looking at two measures, sort of our first ones for ICU, and one is around risk-adjusted length of stay and risk-adjusted mortality.
Okay. So one thing – I don't think it will change the scoring, but is more of the comment, both to measure developer and for the steering committee going forward, is going to be one of these best-in-class considerations if you're, because you want to look at the rationale for the measure in general. Because if you really care about how does the patient do long-term, you're looking at a, you know, this is not a patient group that does well long-term. If you're looking at how do they do when they hit the door of an emergency room or a hospital with variceal bleeding, they may be best, that may be best measured with a larger denominator of anyone who needs critical care. But it's just, it's just more editorial and just a comment to pass forward.
Okay, John.
All right, John,
thank you for leading the discussion. Thank you for, for their comments. Karen, we're going to put you up for opioids. Don't put anybody to sleep. That's the challenge.
David, because Dr. Hall is on the line and we don't really have anybody from that Pfizer measure, would we? Do you think we could switch and reverse the order and bring the colorectal cancer complication rate measure forward?
Sure, sure, absolutely. Rocco, can you walk us through that?
Yes, I can. So this is a an outcome measure, risk-adjusted colorectal surgery outcome measure that is based on NISQIP data and NISQIP measures to identify outcomes such as morbidity and mortality after colorectal surgery. So with respect to importance of the measure, the measure focus does address a high impact aspect of healthcare. There are large numbers of patients have these procedures. It's a leading cause of morbidity and mortality, and there are obviously many patient societal consequences of poor quality care. So I gave this a C for completely with respect to high impact.
I would agree. Any other discussion on that? Okay, you're off. You're off to an A plus.
All right. Opportunity for improvement. There are the authors of this have pointed out a number of significant quality problems and opportunities for improvement using their data from NISQIP hospitals. And so I also gave this C for completely.
Other comments? Okay.
With respect to outcome or evidence to support measure focus, the measure focus is looking at both morbidity and mortality. It's a, obviously a short-term 30-day outcome, and it certainly does measure the NQF areas that we're interested in, so I also gave this.
My only question there was, is are we sure that these are directly tied to outcomes, in particular things like surgery and length of stay, and I wasn't totally clear that that was defined to make it a complete.
Is that going to be more of a question of validity?
Yeah. So, Reva, the comment, I guess, is that should we just put that down under validity and not under the complete nature?
Yeah, I think that's more.
Okay.
It's going to be cleaner.
Okay. So the consensus here, Rocco, is that you'd make it 3 for 3 on complete. Is this discussions around that? Okay. How about scientific acceptability?
Okay. So with respect to measures, specifications, and scientific acceptability, we get into more discussion. So they have looked at, for numerator, they have looked at particular complications which have excellent definitions as defined by NISQIP. The authors of this have proposed this as a composite measure. Basically a ratio of observed versus expected complications in a colorectal population. Although the score computing isn't clear from the actual numbers listed, I assume it's NISQIP-based. and therefore the strengths are that the measure uses these valid definitions. But when you look at those actual complications, the things like urinary tract infections, which are very common after colorectal surgery, would be lumped all into this observed to expected ratio as equally as something like septic shock. And I've just recently become the surgeon contact person or surgeon champion here for our Nisqually Hospital. From what I understand, you can drill down, and I'm just getting my feet wet here, you can drill down to each particular outcome or each particular complication, but again, the way the authors have written this, this is a composite measure of observed to expected ratio for complications and for mortality. The difficulties in identifying the sample size calculations, which we'll get into in a little bit of detail. With respect to the denominator, it seems that they haven't listed the CPT codes for the denominator, but I assume that they're the same CPT codes that are used with the NISQIP definitions. With respect to risk adjustment, there are several issues that come up with their risk adjustment. One is pre-op. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I just coughed. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. With respect to risk adjustment, risk stratification, they talk about pre-op functional status and a number of other variables that are not clearly defined in the measure. But again, I assume that all these definitions are readily available through NISQIP. It would be difficult to gather some of these definitions for non-NISQIP hospitals, and as you all know, most hospitals are not NISQIP hospitals. NISQIP is, from my last look, it was 251 hospitals out of more than 5,000. The risk adjustment method has been tested in a NISQIP sample, which is a very small subset of academic and VA hospitals, but not the general population or the general hospital sample. The preamble quotes studies by Cali that documents high mortality in obese patients and other risk factors that we cannot adjust for, specifically things like BMI. And there are serious issues with respect to risk adjustment in general, given the inability to register prior procedures and surgical complexity, which is a major issue when you are looking at observed to expected ratios in a surgical population. The measure does not include the new NISQIP field labeled prior operation within 30 days, which could potentially help adjust for surgical complexity. But again, the strength of this measure specification is really in the fact that it has been very useful in the NISQIP hospitals that presently use it. So because of that, I gave it a P for partially.
This is Bruce Hall. I just wanted to ask, I think Rocco brings up a lot of great points. Do you want me to comment on everything at the end, or what serves best?
Yeah, let's have you comment on everything at the end, just as kind of keep on time here.
Okay.
Okay, P. I graded it as a P for precise for measure specification.
Okay, so you had from just so we can keep track here, you've gone through the specificity and the reliability.
I'm getting into reliability 2B right now.
Okay.
Right. With respect to reliability, the reliability estimates I had some difficulty with. They use an intra-class correlation coefficient, which is estimated. They quote 0.00377, which is a particularly low intra-class correlation. It does not include the data as to how that number was developed, but the higher the ICC, the lower there is with respect to variance within that estimate. So that number would imply that there's considerable variation. they estimate that their reliability of 0.4, and they provide an equation of R equals N times ICC divided by 1 plus N minus 1 times ICC. And I did the calculation real quick, and from their ICC of 0.00377, and if they wanted a reliability estimate of 0.4, a sample size would have to be 176 patients, which would decrease the number of hospitals that would actually fit or be properly sampled by a reliability estimate of 0.4. So I'm not sure if the calculation, I'm not a math major, but by looking through it, it does not compute to 0.4. Even if their estimate is correct and their sample size is 64 with a reliability of 0.4, that would only include about 42% of U.S. hospitals, which, although it would include the majority of colectomies performed across the U.S., it would not provide data for the majority of hospitals. So with respect to reliability, I had significant concerns, and I listed that as M for minimally.
So this is John. Just to clarify, 42%, only 42% of hospitals nationwide have that level of or that number of colorectal surgery cases.
Yeah, would meet the criteria for the number of CPT codes that would need to be used in a year's sample.
Wow.
And that's with an estimate of 65 patients with an ICC of 0.00377 and reliability of 0.4. Maybe this is a good time for Bruce to comment, or should I keep?
Go ahead, Bruce. You can comment on.
Okay. Well, let me just back up to some of the other comments, and we'll work down to reliability. One of the earliest questions was whether the outcomes that we've specified are tied to outcomes. These are outcomes specifically. This is not a composite measure in that it does not bring measurement axes that differ together. This would actually be considered an aggregate clinical measure. So composite measure would be, you know, when you combine one process measure with another with an outcome measure or utilization of an IMA with rate of heart attack and whatnot, those are what we would consider composites. This is just strictly an aggregate of several clinical outcomes, so we call it a clinical aggregate. The OE ratio methods have been, you know, published many, many times. It's our standard algorithm. It's based on NISQIP, but the measure would not require a hospital to take part in NISQIP. The definitions will be publicly available. The definitions are given in our paperwork, so I'm not sure why Rocco didn't see them, but they are given in the paperwork. They're in the version that I'm staring at right now. The aggregate clinical outcome is an outcome of death or major complications. We've eliminated several less severe complications from NSQIP, such as superficial wound infection, and the decision that certain complications were deemed major was based either on the total clinical burden of the complication, the relationship of that complication to excess length of stay, or the relationship of that complication to mortality itself. And this is a standard approach that we've used with other measures put before the NQF as well. And if that needs to be clarified, we'd be very happy to clarify that. We do list the denominator CPT codes. Again, I'm not sure whether Rocco just doesn't have them printed in front of him, but they are listed. The variables such as functional status are, again, all defined in our paperwork, so I'm not sure why there's a gap there on the papers that you all are looking at, but in the papers that I'm staring at, they are listed and defined. The notion that these would be difficult to gather, we've reduced the data set considerably from what a standard NSQIP data set is, so this data set is actually a very small number of data points on any one case. Our experience is that nurses and data personnel don't generally have difficulty gathering these points, but if we get to the point of the estimated FTE, we might revisit or come back to this. We think the burden is actually pretty small based on this specification. Yes, this approach has been tested in an observational sort of fashion with the existing NSQIP data. And prior procedures within 30 days actually result in a patient being excluded if they're part of the NSQIP set. Surgical complexity is a very important point. This algorithm, as we've specified it, actually includes every single CPT code in a preliminary regression, which ends up generating a linear scalar risk score for every single CPT code that's in the denominator. And so the CPT codes each therefore carry their own measure of surgical complexity. Now that does not completely rule out for some sort of systematic bias between CPT codes, but we think it goes a long way toward controlling for procedural mix. Coming down to reliability, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I think that the American College of Surgeons seems to me, from even from the other discussions I've witnessed you all having this morning, that the American College of Surgeons is actually providing much more information on reliability than I'm seeing with other measures. So this measure of reliability is one that has been championed by RAND. There are additional publications on this. Doctors Iazzoni and Norman have published on the applicability of this kind of reliability measure based on intraclass correlation. If further references on that are needed, we will be very happy to clarify and provide them. And Rocco, I'm not exactly sure why you don't get the same number that we do, but we've checked this calculation, and based on our intraclass correlation, we are estimating the reliability to be 0.4. So we can re-review that with you at any time if you like. That would correlate actually to about 63 cases, so we've rounded that to 65 cases. And in fact, while about 42% of the hospitals in the country are addressed, based on our latest information, it actually looks like closer to 85% of all colectomies in the country are incorporated. Now, again, our experience through the American College of Surgeons is that there's never going to be one measure that is applicable to all hospitals in the country. The lowest two-fifths of hospitals in the country that do any surgery do fewer than 300 cases of any surgery a year. And so we very much acknowledge that not every single hospital in the country will have volumes that will make them candidates for risk-adjusted measures. And we assume that in any implementation that might be put into place in the future, very small volume hospitals might have to be judged under a different measure, perhaps under a risk-adjusted process, I mean, a non-risk-adjusted process measure. So we fully are explicitly stating that we realize this wouldn't apply to all hospitals, that certain hospitals have to meet a certain volume requirement to participate. But again, I think, you know, listening to the discussion from other measures this morning, I think we're providing much more information on this than many other measures put before the NQF. I don't think there's any risk-adjusted measure in front of the NQF or already past the NQF that would be applicable to every single hospital in the country. So we kind of feel like we're providing much more information on the reliability estimate than most other agencies are, and we stand by this information, 42% of hospitals, but 85% of cases. So I think that brings us to reliability. I'll stop there and take any questions if there are any.
Rocco, how about make a suggestion here for the how we would score this then?
Yeah, I don't disagree that the reliability estimate is what they have generated at RAND or ACS or where the measure comes from. I guess what I'm commenting on is that based on the formulas that they've given us, my own calculation implies that these are not correct. But I certainly, you know, there may be a digit that's off somewhere in the numbers that were provided in the measure format here. Because of my concern about the numbers that were provided, I listed this as minimally, but I certainly can move up to 2 partially. And I agree, they have provided much more of the test statistics than any of the other measures we've looked at.
Bruce, I have one quick question. You said that this is it's clearly a novel process. Has this been validated as far as the application for your extractions?
Has the reliability issue been validated,
or
do I misunderstand the question?
No. Reliability, when you co-adjust for the variables, you say you co-adjust for all these variables.
Yeah, and we provided an additional letter of some clarifications to the NQF yesterday, which I'm not sure you all have, but again, this particular approach to estimating reliability, if you will, is not one that that is agreed upon by 100% of researchers and practitioners in the country. But the best experts